Welcome. I'm Jessica Teigen, and this is the Evolving to Exceptional podcast, where we talk about reaching peak performance in our workplaces, homes, and communities so that we can live our best life possible, an exceptional life. I would like to welcome back all of our Evolving to Exceptional listeners to this week's episode of the Evolving to Exceptional podcast. Today, we have a guest, CEO and strategic marketer and Story Brand certified guide, Julia Block Pearson, who's here with us to talk about a little bit about what it's like to be a leader of a small business and how, even if you're in a small business, you can still do a lot for your people and put people first. And I'm really excited to dive into this and learn more about what she's doing in her organization in order to create an exceptional experience for her people. So, Julia, welcome to the show. I want to give you a chance to maybe introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background, who you are, and why it is that you do what you do.
For sure. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. So, everybody, I am Julia. I live out in Salt Lake City. I have a toddler who's like a tiny dictator who kept me up till 3 a.m. last night. And I have 3 dogs, which is 3 too many. So if anybody wants one, I'd be happy to send you all of them. But for my work life, I lead an organization called Stratos Creative Marketing. I actually founded it almost 6 years ago as a freelancer, and we now have grown to 13 team members. Our whole goal is to help business owners improve their relationship with their social media for their business. And so that's our mission, and our mission for this upcoming year is to help 750 business owners via our DIY tools and things like that. And so, yeah, so that's what we've done. To answer your question, like why I do it, it's actually because I went through several terrible job experiences, to be quite frank. Coming out of college, I thought there was something wrong with me because I had one employer who told me I was the most discouraging person that he had ever worked with. To be quite frank, he needed to go to therapy. And I also had somebody tell me that they had hired me because I was young, unmarried, and single. And so they wanted me to work more than 40 hours, but not get paid for it. And then I also had an employer who didn't believe me when I told them that my supervisor had sexually harassed me and other women in the organization. So by the end of those experiences, I was like, what is wrong with me? Why can't I keep the job for over a year or more than a year? And what do I want to do? And I realized that I wanted to work in a place that gave me meaning and freedom, but that as I grew, I wanted to be able to offer that to other people so people could show up to work and enjoy it, show up as their full selves, show up and not be concerned about being harassed or discouraged or verbally manipulated. And that's the working environment that I wanted to create. Yes, we do marketing. Yes, we do social media, but the reason we do it is to create meaningful work for other people. And so
I absolutely love that. You're singing my song over there. I love everything to do with creating exceptional experiences for people mm-hmm. and positive experiences. And I think it's interesting that you had so many experiences in a row. But what I found is that those challenging experiences are really common, that there's just a lot of workplaces that struggle mm-hmm. despite the fact that we know what it takes to be a great workplace and what it takes to do right by people mm-hmm. and the statistical benefits, the financial benefits of doing so. Mm-hmm. There's still just a lot that have not grasped that or taken the steps necessary to accomplish that. So mm-hmm. tell me a little bit about some of the things that you've done as you've built your business. I think you've built your business over like the last 6 or 7 years. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Yes. And in order to set it up for the success, in order for it to accomplish mm-hmm. this outcome or this purpose that you talk about.
Mm-hmm. For sure. The first piece of wisdom that I got during my first year of freelancing was I was so excited to hire people that one of my mentors was like, but you don't even have work for yourself. So I was just like so excited about this like personal mission that I had. But it was a really good encouragement of like step back, make sure that you have long-term work for people so that you don't turn around and have to let them go. And we've had our fair share of mistakes. But that's one of my biggest things is, and for any business owner out there, it's so complicated figuring out, do you hire so you have enough people to deliver the work, or do you need to get the work and then hire the people? And it's like this forever balance. I feel like I do it differently every time, and it's like a constant struggle. But I think that was one of the first things, was to make sure that I was balancing those two things, the work and the people, so that they would coincide. And then another thing that I feel like we've done really well is we've actually just listened to our staff. So for one, I knew I had started my work, my business while I was single, had no kids, but I knew that someday I wanted kids. So I knew that someday we would have a maternity plan, and I had no idea what it would look like. But then what happened is all of a sudden we had 5 staff members on our team all have babies within 6 months. And so all of a sudden I was like, oh crap, like we need to like figure this out now. This is a now problem. But I think that's the other thing, is we've taken things as they've come, as people have asked for them. We had one of our team members said, hey, like I would really like to volunteer. Is there any way we could get some volunteer time off? And so we have a plan where our team can accrue hours to go do things that they're passionate about. We have another team member who is like, hey, we talk about mental health all the time. Like, we should just have a monthly mental health day that we can take whenever we need it. And so we instituted that. I think that has been the biggest asset, because we're doing the things that our team wants rather than the things that we think they want. So.
Okay. So I've got to ask, how did you solve 5 people going out on maternity leave?
It was not pretty. I will tell you that. We have our ops manager was the one person in our leadership not having a baby, and she held it all together for us for sure. Fortunately, we were all staggered by a month, so we were all figuring out, okay, this is this week, these 5 people will be gone. This week, these 4 people will be gone. But we decided, for those listening, it's not like we have huge profit margins. It's not like we have tons of residual money just laying around that we can offer things like this. But I knew that I wanted to be with my kid. And so what we decided was to do something creative. And so we offered our team, anybody who is going to take parental leave, they could take either 6 weeks fully off, or they could do or 12 weeks part-time off, or a combination. And so we set it up where we were like, okay, if you want a month where you are untouchable and unreachable, do the month and then take your rest of your time and ease back into it. Or if you want 6 weeks, like then take those 6 weeks. It wasn't something like easy, because that does cost money. But I think that was really helpful, because we are a small staff. And so some of my staff, especially like we had one of our male employees, his wife was having a baby, so he took parental leave, but he decided to take the part-time route. He took 2 weeks full-time off and then did part-time. And even that was helpful as an employer, because I was like, okay, we don't have to fully cover him like for that whole time. We still have him, and it's more like he's on a 2-week vacation, and then he just has a smaller workload. So that's how we figured it out, was everybody was taking different types of time off, and we were piecing things together. We did not come away unscathed, though. So like, I hope we never have 5 babies all at the same time again.
Yeah, that sounds like a nightmare. So one of our team members was out over the summer. Mm-hmm. She had a baby. And you do, in my past work life, I took for granted the paid maternity leave. And mm-hmm. as a small business owner, that's a bigger hit. That's a bigger challenge. Mm-hmm. And then my employee came back. She's 3 days a week so that she can mm-hmm. keep her baby out of daycare. But I could consider that a win because with how often kids get sick in daycare, the fact that she can, her mother-in-law can take care of her daughter while she's working, and then I get her the other 3 days of the week means she's actually probably working more than she would if she had her baby in daycare and sick all the time. So that's the other challenge that comes into play there. But I think it's a good example of in small businesses, benefits or things that you can offer that are actually pretty hard on a small business in a way that it isn't in a larger business. And it does take some courage to be willing to give to that level as a leader to your people. And because there's risk involved, they still might not come back. There's all those challenges that come with it. And so I think that's why a lot of small businesses just don't. They don't have to do it. You don't have to provide even unpaid time off under FMLA if you're a small business. That's not required. Yeah. But it does make it really challenging to meet customer demands and business demands if you don't have the staff to deliver it.
For sure. It is so complicated. And and that's where I think like creativity is like required when it's a small business trying to figure this out. We have one of our core values is humans first, workers second. And I think that's where we've tried to play. Whereas, okay, how can we treat our people as humans first, workers second, while also still having like a profitable business, things like that. I can tell you so for those of you who are listening who are like, yeah, that'll never work for me. We've only ever had 2 staff turnover in 6 years. Most people stick around for a long time. If they leave, it's because they're pursuing another dream and not because they hated us. And so that's been really cool. We've actually had 1 staff person who's been here for 5 years. And so there's something to like having people around for a long time, because they know the clients, they know the processes, you don't have to train them. And so our turnover is not quick or high. And so I think that helps save money, but I agree, it's impossible to figure out how much like a maternity plan will truly cost you, depending on how you choose to do it. But we didn't institute that until year 4. Prior to that, like we're building up like our PTO and our holiday plans, like things that like felt smaller, but still were really good for our employees. I agree. It's complicated.
So I'm curious, given like the size of your organization and the number of employees, I think you mentioned you have about 13 employees. Is that right? Yeah. So, given the size of your organization, what are some of the biggest challenges that your people are facing? Or what are some of the biggest challenges that you struggle with in terms of helping to create that experience for people? And we talked about some of the policies and things like that, but I'm just curious, what are some of the biggest things that come up?
Yeah. Apologies for the dog, everybody. Like I said, I have 3 of them and you can have them all. But I think some of the biggest challenges are that my employees face that we've been trying to solve is childcare, is time off, is also like pay rates, figuring out what a living wage is, and then also what a cost of living raise truly is. Those are all of some of the challenges that we've had to figure out in terms of, and that we're like still working on because we haven't cracked the code. I don't think we ever will. I think some of the other ones that we've been working on are what do boundaries look as a fully remote team who's on their phones all their time? Because they're also a social media company. And so what do boundaries look like in a really healthy organization? And how have we messed it up? And how have we done a good job? Because we've done both. We've played on both sides of that boundary. And then even we've had a really big emphasis and took a course by a woman named Annie Gashiru who teaches about how to create more equitable and racially equitable organizations. And I think that's also something that we're working on to create a better environment too.
It's interesting as we're talking, I'm thinking, I think a lot about the satisfaction of employees and addressing the challenges you're talking about, like pay raises and childcare challenges and pay time off and how to work with each other and set boundaries and those types of things. Really get into that satisfaction, whether people are happy or satisfied with the work that they're doing. And then there's the other side when we think about satisfaction, because happy employees aren't always the most productive or engaged employees, even if they are happy. Mm-hmm. And so we know that engagement and performance go hand in hand, that when employees are really engaged, that's where you get the performance and the results and the better output and productivity out of people. Mm-hmm. So how do you address that challenge with your team? How do you look at those kind of components of being in the workplace and work with your team to make sure that you're creating that energy and that engagement and that commitment and all of those things?
For sure. We've on occasion had very happy employees who are not doing the work that I want them to. And so one of the tools that we employ probably on a semi-annual basis is the Eisenhower matrix. And so for those of you who haven't heard of it, it's like you draw your X and your Y axis. Go back to like your math class. On the top side, you put they're good at it and they're bad at it. And then on the whatever the long axis is, I'm terrible at math. But you on the other quadrants, you're going to put they enjoy doing and they hate doing. And I have all of my employees go through this at least twice a year where they have to make a list of every single task, every single thing that they're doing, and they have to plot it out on this chart. It's going to end up in a quadrant that's they love it and they're good at it. They love it, but they're bad at it. They hate it, but they're good at it. Or they hate it and they're bad at it. And so we slowly want to move people away from the I hate it and I'm bad at it, because that is going to kill both productivity and satisfaction. And so we don't ever want anybody to be working in that area. Sometimes we all know work is work. Like you have to work in areas that like you might not enjoy, but you might be good at. And then there's other things that like you might enjoy, but you're bad at it. And those are the things that I want to train for. And so those are like, that's the way we kind of measure, okay, where are we landing with productivity and satisfaction? How do they intersect? Because ultimately I want people to be doing things that they enjoy and that they're also really good at. So I get both. That's what I ultimately want.
I love that. I think it's a good way to get an assessment or an understanding of where people are and what's working, what's not working, and line people up for success so that they are working on the things that they most enjoy and that they can be successful at and accomplishing and creating results. And you're definitely going to get more out of them by taking that approach.
For sure. And what's really cool is that when you have multiple team members who are doing it, you can sometimes find stuff that one person hates, but the other person loves, and switch off. You can't always do that. Like I said, sometimes we have to do, like work is work. We don't always love it. I think like the biggest fallacy is like find something you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Like it's still work. You still have to do your bookkeeping. I'm sorry. But in the end, it makes for a really good team morale because you are listening to people. So even if, and I tell my team a lot, I know you hate this. This is like the next area I will hire for. And so maybe we can't solve the problem now or solve the challenge now, but I can say, hey, I know you hate this. This is the next person I'm thinking of hiring. And then that would take that off of your plate. Or, hey, I know you're not very good at this. There's a way we could automate this so that you don't have to be doing it. And so it helps you see like areas in your business too that could be automated. Maybe you can find somebody else who's more productive in them. But even if you can't do anything about it, I think that it helps people feel heard and listened to and validated, that then at least they'll hang on for a while. So
I think that's such a powerful, powerful approach to helping people and looking at your holistic organization and who does what and how to create those synergies and hire for those things. I'm curious if you were to think about what is something that you could bring to your organization that you think would bring it a lot of value right now? If you could bring anything to your organization to really support it and help it be successful and make a difference for your people, what would you most like to bring to your organization?
I would love to, for my organization, I would love to have more opportunities for professional development and personal development. I used to be like what people call a professional / personal development junkie. I have since become a mother and don't have time for that, or at least not as much time for that. But I think that I still intake all of this development work here and there. And I think that as leaders, we are exposed to a lot of that, but not all employees are. And it's not that they won't like it or they won't do it. They just don't know about it or they haven't heard about it. And I would love to be able to do more of that. And if I was talking to a different organization, I would say the same thing. I have found my managers from like new hires that kind of came up in the ranks and realized, oh, they're really good at this. And so I think that's another thing that my professional and personal development has helped me be able to see qualities in people that will help the organization in the long run, because maybe they actually can do way more than what we've given them credit for at the beginning. So
I love that. And one of the things that we find in working with organizations and individuals both is mm-hmm. that when we work with a whole company or a whole team around performance development or our performance mm-hmm. practices, there's this synergy and this energy that's created mm-hmm. because people are doing it together and they are using mm-hmm. the same language and they're able to apply it with each other and talk about it and engage mm-hmm. around it. And there's a little bit of this mutual accountability that helps them to mm-hmm. move through it and to get it done. And when we work with individuals, it really takes I love your term of a professional or performance development junkie. Like mm-hmm. it takes somebody who just really wants to do it themselves and they're just internally mm-hmm. committed to doing it because they love it to push themselves to do it. And a lot of people, mm-hmm. there's a lot more people that can benefit from it than mm-hmm. who are maybe intrinsically motivated to do it. Mm-hmm. And the workplace is such a great opportunity or within a company organization to provide that structure to say, we're mm-hmm. all doing this together, or we're gonna use this approach, or we're gonna do this development together, because then everybody gets the benefit and there's that like kind of commitment or accountability or that responsibility to say, oh, mm-hmm. my company is paying for this, we're doing this together, I have to do it. And even though mm-hmm. there's a little bit of the have to versus want to, as they get the benefits, then it starts to translate into, oh, this is really good for me, oh, mm-hmm. I should do more of this. And it reminds me of like mm-hmm. exercise that way. Oftentimes mm-hmm. we don't really want to do it, but then once you get started and you start to feel the benefit, oh, yeah. then it becomes easier and you're like, yes, mm-hmm. I love this. I love this.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Like a good example, we did a session with a productivity coach last year. And she talked all about like bookends for your days, like making like your to-do list and how to do it strategically. And so it was great because then our whole team could talk about it using that language. So I was just affirming the fact that like you are exactly right. I think there's also power in the actual implementation. So.
Well, and I love that you mentioned being a mom too, because I myself, I'm a mom of three. I have a 7-year-old, almost 8-year-old boy, and then I have twin 4-year-old girls. And so finding time for personal, professional development around three kids is dramatically different from when I had one. It was a big step change with my twins. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I think we end up struggling with, and I'd love your thoughts on this, is we think of personal or professional development as the way we went to school or the way that we got educated, like sitting through a course or a training or doing something for this period of time, versus looking at it as something that's integrated with our life, where we can, most of my personal and professional development now occurs either while I'm working out while I'm brushing my teeth, getting ready for bed, folding laundry. Like that's when I'm watching training videos or when I'm listening to a podcast or a book on tape or whatever. And we have to look at training and development. How do I fit it within my life and then apply it in that context? And the reality is, in my role as mother, I sometimes get even more opportunities than I do in the workplace to apply some of those development skills, to be able to apply them in how I'm interacting with my son or my spouse mm-hmm. and within my family. And so when we can think about it less as this is work development, this is home and separating mm-hmm. it, and we can think about our life holistically and embed it into our life mm-hmm. experience, then it becomes less daunting, I think.
Totally. I agree. And I would take that one step further that when I said I was like a professional development junkie, like I would be listening to 3 to 4 hours of podcasts every day, reading like a book a week. And I realized that suddenly I was taking, first of all, I have a 20-month-old. No, we don't have time for that anymore. Like I do not. I cannot even imagine 3 kids. I don't have time for it. But I also realized that even back then, I wasn't applying it. I was taking it in and I would be reading a book and have 50 great ideas, but then none of them would get done because then I was on to the next book. And I think that there has also been a little bit of wisdom in, for me at least, like stepping back, also integrating it into all of the parts of my life, but stepping back and saying, okay, I just read this. What am I going to do with it? Because or else why did I read it mm-hmm. or why did I take it in? Or I'd have been reading so many books and then I'd have 100 ideas and I would get so overwhelmed and not know which ones were most important. And so I feel like that has also been really important practice. Is I feel like parenting in general is like a balance of prioritization, like a game of prioritization, figuring out what is the biggest priority right now. And I think that personal and professional development is part of that too. And so I love the idea of integrating. I love the idea of slowing down a little bit because our brains have a lot going on.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. one of the things I like to say is that taking in information doesn't automatically translate to knowledge. Knowledge mm-hmm. occurs when we integrate that information. Mm-hmm. And when we look at that through a neuroscience lens in particular, and we talk about that, we have neurons, and neurons are the mm-hmm. the cells in our brain that fire and wire together and really create meaning, information, help us in how we mm-hmm. perceive and make sense of the world. And those neurons aren't just located in our head brain. We also have neurons in our heart and in mm-hmm. our guts. And mm-hmm. each of those kind of have their own functions that they perform. So our head is obviously thinking, meaning, making, and understanding. Our heart is emotions, connection, mm-hmm. and what we find to be important or what we value most. And our gut brain is about mobilization, action taking, self-preservation, mm-hmm. keeping us safe, and also our core identity, who we are at our core. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we do when we talk about development and growth and performance is look at what you've learned through that lens. What does my mm-hmm. head really think about what it's learned? What does my heart truly mm-hmm. feel about what I've learned? And what does my gut sense to act upon based upon mm-hmm. what I've learned, what I've taken in? And then you're really mm-hmm. tapping into that inner wisdom and bringing it together to help you with how do I translate this into knowledge? How do I take mm-hmm. this information and integrate it into a learning, into an insight, and then ultimately into action? Because all true mm-hmm. knowing is in the doing. And so it gets you to that point.
I love that because I think that there are so many things that might get stuck in one of those and not actually become something that we do. And or it might be something that if, just like you were saying, processing it with your head, your heart, and then your gut is, but I'm going to let this one go. And that's okay. And that's the action. Like a non-action is also an action. And I think that that's also incredibly important, because in the end, if we're going to be humans first and have that sort of attitude, we can't do all things and be all things to all people. Like, it's just impossible. And so I think that being able to think through it, feel through it, and then act on it is such a really good way to be able to process what's most important to us.
And you mentioned too about being a mom and the time management and how mm-hmm. to navigate it all. And I think in my experience, and I learned this the hard way because I went through extreme burnout. My twins were 9 months old when the pandemic hit. So we were home with really small kids, no childcare. My husband and I both working. I was the leader in a business of responsible for talent management, IT, customer service, legal, project coordination, like all the operations functions. And you can't do it all. You actually can't do all of the things. One of the things I've learned through the process of understanding neuroperformance and the neuroscience behind performance is that we often get hung up on time management. And I think that in my experience, it's not always a good or effective approach, because time's finite, time's limited. So we actually can only manage it to a certain extent. You can only manage it so much, because there's only so much of it. Now, how we perceive time is actually managed by our heart. So there's recent research that actually shows that how we experience time is affected by our heartbeat, by the state of our nervous system and how our heart is beating. And that's why sometimes time can seem like it's moving really slow, and other times it can feel like it's moving really fast. It's because it's actually changing our perception of it. And so when you think about it from that perspective, it's more about our energy, and it's more about how we're using our energy, how our body is experiencing the work, the family, the challenges, the good things, how we're living and experiencing the world, than it is about how we're managing our time in it. And you can take a really short amount of time and really put your energy into it and make it really valuable. Or you can take a really long period of time and waste energy and make it completely a waste of time, a waste of useless energy. And so you really, when you start to think about it from that perspective, you put people more in the driver's seat instead of feeling like, I have to look at what do I have to get done? And I'm not saying there aren't practices for time management. We certainly need that as well. Yeah. But we almost need to take a step back before that and look at our energy management first, because you can only manage so many activities in the amount of time that you have so many different ways. Like there just isn't another way to do it unless I manage my energy differently.
I love this. I feel like I've gone to therapy, but don't worry, I haven't. But I think that's so important. I've heard stuff like this similarly explained, but this is just like a really good explanation of that, because I do agree. I even in myself, like when I am more anxious, I feel like I have less time, and it suddenly is like your heart taking control over the perception of it. I love that. So that's awesome.
And what goes along with that when we talk about professional development is that when people are anxious, when they're dysregulated, when our nervous system's in a fight, flight, or freeze mode, like we're stressed out and to some degree, we can't learn. Our brain can't create neural pathways when it's in a survival mode, which makes sense, right? If our body thinks it's trying to survive, then our brain isn't worried about learning. It's not worried about taking in new information. And so when we're operating in that way, we actually can't create new creative solutions or look at the world in a different way or develop a new skill set or capability. And so what often we see in organizations is people try to train people. And if those people are at capacity, if they're stressed out, if they're worn out, if they're burnt out, I can't train them on anything until we deal with that first, because nothing I train them on is going to stick.
Oh, I totally, and I feel like we've seen that even in our organization, because we serve like 45 plus clients with 13 people. And it really, we do have moments where it's okay, we've got to stretch a little bit, But more and more we're learning, okay, this needs to be like a temporary stretch with a goal in mind, because if we stay in that stretch, then everybody gets burnt out. So, for sure.
So tell me a little bit more about your experience with your people and what you do with them on a regular basis to create that humans first, happy workplace. Mm-hmm. How do you interact together? What's unique about your culture and your organization that makes it fulfill your meaning and purpose, right? Of creating that environment for your people.
Yeah. So I mentioned this before, but we're a fully remote team, which has like its own challenges with that, because we're not in the office. We're not like just making like chatting here and there. So we have regular meetings on the calendar, and that we know that we'll see everybody on Monday mornings for a stand-up check-in. And then we have a staff meeting every other week. But then we also do really fun things. Like each month, like one person on our team hosts what we call a happy hour. And so people come and somebody will either have prepared a game or an activity. And it's really just us paying for people to hang out for an hour. And that has been really good. I think I knew our culture was working one day when I had an employee living in Madison, Wisconsin, and another employee living in the Chicago suburbs, which are about 2.5-3 hours apart. And all of a sudden I see a picture of them together, and that one was driving through the other city, and like they stopped by to exchange some beer and because they had their favorite beers and they wanted to exchange them. And I was like, something is working, because these people are friends outside of work now. And that is what I wanted. And I don't think that we can control that, but I think that we can provide situations where we can build community and camaraderie. So yeah, I think we've just been really intentional, even with remote work, to make sure that we have time that's face to face. So
I'm curious, as the CEO, as the leader, as the person that's creating this awesome work environment for people, what is it that you need? What is it that supports you and allows you to be able to do that for your people? How do you get your needs met, or how do you support yourself so that you can be supportive to your team?
That is a great question, and I feel like I'm still trying to figure that out. And I feel like it's different in different seasons. So one of the biggest supports has been to develop a small leadership team within our organization where I can be a little bit more honest. I'm always honest with everybody. I can be more transparent with the state of how things are going. Or, hey, like we lost a client and this is how it's going to affect our finances. I can open up my hand a little bit more with them. And so I think that has been really helpful, to have people who work with me who can be supportive, and they feel a little bit more like coworkers and peers than they do like my employees. Whereas there are other people in our organization that my leader supervise, and then there's like a degree of removal or a degree of distance. I feel like that has been really important. I think that going back to being a mom, I'm only 20 months into this thing, and I've been learning like, okay, what do I need to be a great mom? What do I need to be a great leader? What do I need to be a great wife? And when do those things like conflict, and how can I integrate them? And learning to work out with a very clingy toddler around has been like one of my recent goals, like where I'm like, okay, I know that working out helps my mental health and helps me feel supported. But it's hard when you have a kid around. And so like, how do I do that? Or even learning, okay, like we've had a nanny and she's been great. That's one of the other big blessings and big supportive things, but she's on medical leave right now. And so my husband and I are covering, and like our poor kid is like bouncing back and forth. But at what point does Netflix and PBS Kids babysit our kid? And when is that appropriate? And when is it like too much? And Long answer, short. I don't really know. I like.
Then you know what? Like then you're doing it exactly right, because there's no parent, there's no parenting handbook, and there's actually no right answer. And we've actually been working on or developing a parent decision making course. We have a leadership decision making. Mm-hmm. We're working on a parenting one, where again, what we believe and what I believe is that when we tap into that wisdom, that the best thing we can do is tap into our head, heart, and gut, our messages, mm-hmm. and ask, what's the best decision for me to make here? And mm-hmm. that decision is unique to you in that moment, in that situation, in that point in time. And it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks or what anyone else is doing. You're the one that has to tap into that and answer that question.
Right. And then tomorrow I might make the totally different.
And that may be totally right then too. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. And so I think like when I think of the supportive people, like I also have like people in my life, like my sister and my husband, who I can be honest about those conflicting feelings, because I think that we do have competing feelings when it comes to business, parenting, all of the things. And I have found that what's most important is to just have people I can share that with and not have to pretend around.
And I love that you talked about the family component to it, because I think often we try to segment those two things. We try to segment mm-hmm. family from work. And obviously in recent years, all those lines have been super blurred together more than ever before. But the truth mm-hmm. is, even before, our everywhere we go, we bring our bodies with us. So whether we're mm-hmm. at work or we're at home, it's the same body. It's the same way of being. Mm-hmm. It's the same person that's in interacting in both those areas. And it's one of the reasons that like our programs always address both the family and the workplace, because mm-hmm. it's the same skill set. Whether I'm setting an expectation with an employee or I'm doing it with my husband, I still need mm-hmm. to have clear expectations of who's doing what. If I'm giving totally. Feedback, mm-hmm. it's actually sometimes harder to give conscious feedback to one spouse than it is to mm-hmm. an employee 100%. In the workplace. And the same performance practices, the same skill sets mm-hmm. can be applied in both spaces. We've even seen some of the leaders in our programs be able to develop the skill sets faster cool. using them on their family mm-hmm. than they can in the workplace, because they can apply it right yeah. away. Whereas in the workplace, mm-hmm. it maybe takes a little bit longer before they get that opportunity or before mm-hmm. a situation arises for them to use it, but they can use it mm-hmm. with their teenager or they can use it with their spouse right away totally. And they start developing mm-hmm. the skill set.
For sure. And in the end, like you're project managing your household or you're project managing your work. And so in the end, you're exactly right. And I think that I feel like more and more even I feel like I became an entrepreneur during this era where it was like, everything is balanced. Make sure like your work is balanced with your life and don't let them be out of whack. And now I think because of the pandemic and a lot of other things, more and more people are talking about integration. And I've spent a lot of time thinking like, should we be hiring a different nanny? Is it okay that like our kid is like hanging out with us while we're working? What does that look like? And what am I okay with? And I think going back to what you're saying, like making sure like our decisions are all in alignment with her head, heart, and gut, because realizing, you know what, it is good for her to see that her parents work and that they enjoy their work overall. And we also have more opportunities to hang out with her during the day. But also I have friends who send their kids to either nannies or daycares, and that works better for them because then they have a very good like open and shut window where they're for their mental health, they're like, this is when I'm momming, this is when I am like working. And so I feel like there's benefits to both, and I more and more I've learned you do have to kind of figure out what works best for you, because it's different for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And it's not even the same in the same family. Like I mm-hmm. had a nanny for my son until he was 3, and mm-hmm. my girls I put into Montessori at 18 Ooh, months.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
And they loved it. And it's been great mm-hmm. for them. And it worked out great for each of them in those different yeah. unique points in time in what was mm-hmm. going on and what our experiences were and what we were living and right. dealing with. And if I had kids home trying to work all day as 4-year-olds, I wouldn't. It's not possible anymore. So you've got to decide at what point does mm-hmm. it work and does it not work? And I think often mm-hmm. we try to crowdsource our opinions, or we try to gather more data and information. And mm-hmm. you're never going to gather the perfect data to a question mm-hmm. that doesn't have a perfect answer. It just mm-hmm. has what's the best decision for you and mm-hmm. your children and your family right now. And that's mm-hmm. what you go with. And you start trusting yourself to make mm-hmm. those decisions.
For sure. I totally agree. And in the end, like when we're crowdsourcing, you, especially nowadays, you can find everybody who agrees with you and everybody who disagrees with you. And so you will find something of everything. And even we have, like I mentioned earlier, our toddler has decided that sleep is not important to her anymore. And even when I'm like researching, like, why is she up at 3 a.m. and things like that, like some of the people who put resources out are also making money off of us, like our problem. And that's not a bad thing, because obviously there are solutions for our problems. But sometimes the way it comes across is like more discouraging than encouraging. And I think that's also something that I've been learning, is I have a friend who's like, all these sleep traders are setting us up to fail. No matter, like, you're a bad mom if you co-sleep, you're a bad mom if you sleep train, no matter what, you can't win. And so at that point, I feel like it's also another really good reason to like go back and check in with yourself to be like, okay, then what's important to me? Because the only person that I have to be accountable to for my decisions is me. Ultimately, eventually my kid. But like for now, like I have to be okay with my decisions.
And you've got to trust your intuition, and every child is different. So there is no one size fits all works in every scenario. Mm-hmm. My sister happens to be a pediatric sleep specialist. So she specialized in studying mm-hmm. sleep disorders in children, and uh-huh. she works with kids, and every single one is unique, and the approach is different mm-hmm. and how you get to getting them to sleep through the night is different. Sure. And as someone who helps other people in that space, like you talked about, she's had challenges with all of her own children for years. Mm-hmm. Just because you're a specialist doesn't mean you don't also have children that have difficulty sleeping, right? It's a challenge, and there mm-hmm. is no one right way. And I think mm-hmm. it applies in at home, and it applies at work too. There is no one right mm-hmm. way. And so we have to be able to tap into that wisdom of ourselves to make better decisions and to figure out what mm-hmm. the best solution is for our business, for our situation, for mm-hmm. our people.
Totally. I 100% agree. So
I've loved this conversation, Julia, so much. I bet we could talk all day long, but I want to give you a chance before we wrap this up to just give any final words of wisdom you have for mm-hmm. our audience and our listeners today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just connecting all the dots, like if we're making decisions that are unique to us and unique for our wisdom, like or based on our wisdom, whether it's for parenting or work, I think going back to just the idea of listening to ourselves, listening to our employees, listening to our families, like what are the needs? And like, while we can't solve all of them, like how can we hold space for them? Because I think that even as business owners or parents, part of it is just holding space for other people and making sure that they feel heard. Because even if we can't solve the problem, at least they got to express it. And so that would be like one of my biggest takeaways, is as you're trying to figure out what your next right step is, make sure you're listening to the people who it's going to affect. So
I love that advice, and I love everything that you're doing, Julia. I think you're a testament to the fact that it doesn't matter how small your business is, you can still incorporate the practices and the performance approaches and the development practices in order to create that great, exceptional workplace experience for your people. And that mm-hmm. that the time spent there is well worth it, that the return is there, and mm-hmm. that it's valuable and important and appropriate, no matter the size of your business, to be making that mm-hmm. type of investment and really putting your people first and engaging with people on that level of humanity and their wisdom and their insight and their capabilities to provide you value in your business. So I want to thank all of our listeners to listening to this week's episode of Evolving to Exceptional. As always, just remember to always keep evolving, keep growing, keep looking for opportunities to rewire your neural pathways so that you can live an exceptional life, so that you can have more exceptional experiences on your life journey. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and we'll be back again next week with another episode.